Hi there. Welcome to the Proud to Be of Rust and Glass podcast. Today's guest is Carrie Troutman, Ohio-born poet who co-founded ToledoPoet.com and the Toledo Poetry Museum. She's internationally published, but locally focused. While my poetry reading attendance has been sporadic, like most of my social engagements, I think every single one I've been to, you've been there, which is just absolutely amazing to know how much you are out and about supporting poetry and supporting local arts. Thank you for being here today, first of all.
Happy to be here.
Can you tell us a little bit about why you think it's so important to be so heavily involved in these local events?
It's important to me on a personal level because it keeps me connected to what I love, keeps me spending my time, my hours of my days and my life doing things that I enjoy and that enrich me personally. But also, I think on a grander level, I think it's important to continue to support the poetry community that we have in Toledo. More people will have events if they know people are going to come to those events. More people from out of town will come through Toledo to promote their books, to share their work with us, and think of Toledo as a place that is welcoming to poetry if their audience is there.
I see a lot of Toledo poets who are active performing poets who are showing when they go to other places, and all these places that they're going to seem to have a well-established routine and trickle of poetry coming in from all over the place. And it's really cool to see that sort of happening here a little bit too. And I'm sure as somebody who is very heavily involved in that, I'm sure you've got, you know, firsthand experience on that growth.
Yeah, it was something that was important to us when those of us who started ToledoPoet.com and the Toledo Poetry Museum page on Facebook, which is its companion, it was important for us to put Toledo on the map as a possible spot for traveling poets, for people from out of town. We're so smack dab in the middle of Chicago, Detroit, Cleveland, Columbus. You know, we're just right there. So if someone's on a little book tour, they'd be passing
right
through anyway.
Way.
Right. So stop. Share with us. Sell some books. We were very excited. Shortly after we started ToledoPoet.com, we did have someone reach out, a Columbus poet, who sent a message through our contact form saying, I just published a book. Is there some place in Toledo I can come to do a reading from it? And we kind of scrambled, yes, yes, please, please, come up here. And then we found them a venue. And
very cool.
Was definitely a source of pride because that was what we wanted to happen. And it happened pretty right away. And author, his name's Darren Demery, and he's in Columbus, has gone on to publish. This was one of his first books. He's probably published 20 books. I mean, he's a well-published, award-winning author.
That's amazing.
It was great to feel that Toledo was part of the beginning of his career and him branching out and us welcoming him.
That's very cool. I know since the pandemic, we have a lot of virtual spaces for this kind of thing, but what are some of your favorite in-person spaces in Toledo?
Some of the spaces ebb and flow over time. Probably the most consistent active series is Johnny McIntyre's Uncloistered Poetry Series, which has changed homes over the years, but the series itself has been steadily well attended, and she's been able to book readers out months and months in advance, so no shortage of people willing and eager to participate in that series.
Very cool. And I know she's been at the Attic. She was at Calvino's for a while, and I'm sure other spaces.
Black too. Cloister Black was Cloister. The first, which was the source of the name.
I know. That is very cool that you've been able to be so actively involved in all that and see sort of the growth of that community. But yourself as a poet, how long have you been writing poetry?
Since I was 8. So my whole life, really.
Okay.
It's just always been something.
Okay. You're very quick to nail it down to 8 years
old.
Do you have a specific poem that you wrote at that time that you remember still?
Well, there was an Ohio Arts Council funded program that brought artists in residence, writers in residence to schools. And so we had a poet come visit our school, St. Charles in Lima. I was in third grade, 8 years old at the time. And she seemed magical to me.
Just the coolest person you've ever
just
met.
Just the coolest. We had books in the house. My parents were teachers. I had lots of books, and I had some children's poetry books, but it was a lot of Wordsworth and Dickinson and sort of dead poets, nothing current, nothing live. And when she came to the classroom and gave us exercises and had us write, it was this revelation that, this is something people do. Human beings with ponytails and red lipstick make these things that I love and that I, lay in bed with and relish. And it was, I literally got goosebumps. Just think about it. Just the thought of this is a living, breathing thing that happens made by living, breathing people. It was so exciting And so I wrote a poem about my guinea pig that was in a little book that the school put together with all their poems that they had written with this poet. Her name was Devin McNamara, and I just recently emailed her. I reached out to her to kind of say, hey, you came to my school when I was 8, and now I've published 8
books.
Look
at me now.
And thank you. And she was delighted. She sent back right away an email saying, oh, of course I remember doing that. And
do you know if she's still active with her work?
Yeah, she teaches.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah, she's like,
that's so cool.
Someplace in Virginia, I think it was.
That's really cool. Yeah, you realize people who are involved in poetry, people who are writing today, who are still around. We might not be famous. We might not be, you know, in every library and every school across the country like Dickinson or, you know, mm-hmm. those other ones that you mentioned. But, like, we are living, breathing, flawed people. We make mistakes. We write about them. Our words might not look like the words we're taught in school, but they are still very valid. And we've been really lucky on this show to have several really great poets come through and share their work with us. And mm-hmm. It's really incredible to see that.
Yeah, there's no shortage of local writers doing what mm-hmm. we all do, which is one of the things I love about this community is that how many of us there are, just how broad the community is.
And we could be competing in each other's throats. Instead, we're working together.
No, right. Yeah, there's no reason for it.
I mean, I love it. Yeah. So how have you sort of grown as a poet over the years?
I think a lot of it is accepting what I do. I mean, in college, when I started writing, and I'm, of course, friends with some of the same people I was writing with in college and in classes with, it felt like a very niche thing. Like, this is just this weird little thing I do. The world in general doesn't care about it. Doesn't, you know, my boyfriend, now husband, didn't. It's not a thing in mm-hmm. his world. My parents, like. But as I've aged and continued to do this thing that I've always done and publish and become part of this local and nationwide and worldwide community, there's a sense of validation, a sense of it's important that I continue to do this thing that I do and give it time and give it space through working and through raising kids, that there was, I think, just a broadening beyond hobby and notebooks I write in my bed to this is my personality and this is my world that I create for myself.
Kind of changed from, Carrie's little poetry thing to Carrie is a poet.
Right. Yeah. Honestly, even just using that phrase, mm-hmm. you know, I think of all the years I spent meeting my husband's extended family, has a huge family, or his work. He worked in an office environment, so I'd go to parties and have to mingle with strangers, which is just horrifying.
Terrifying. Yeah,
right. For introverted writers. Mm-hmm. But I mean, never would I say, hi, I'm Carrie. I'm a poet. Like, why would I say that? Mm-hmm. It seemed ridiculous. Mm-hmm. To ever say that.
You introduce yourself as one of the other things you are.
I'm just a
spouse.
I work
at the zoo. I'm,
right.
I'm a dad. I'm a mom.
Exactly. Right. So only recently, if I'm within an artistic community or something, would I be like, yes. You know, what do you do? I'm a poet.
That's an amazing achievement, and that's an amazing sort of internal victory that I think you should relish every second of.
Yeah. Yeah.
How has your poetry sort of changed you as a person as you've, you know, grown and evolved?
I've always been someone who takes in information, sensory details, stimuli, and translates them into words in my head. Mm-hmm. You know, so that's the way I express things, the way I process mm-hmm. things is through language, through words. If I see a bird fly by, someone might say, that's a pretty bird. And my brain instantly wants to, you know, the bird flew in the blue sky, blue is his wings. And like, just, it's like a stupid compulsion mm-hmm. to make language out of what I see. As I've gotten older, I think I've recognized that as something unique. I mean, not to me, but to a lot of writers. But when I would realize that when I was 7 or 10 or 12, I kind of assumed I was the only person whose brain works that way. Right. My friends' brains didn't work that way. Right. So as I'm older, I accept that more as a way my brain works, and I'll pull out my phone and I'll write things down, or I'll pull out a notebook and just allow that to be something that I wallow in mm-hmm. as a person mm-hmm. More than I think I used to, not suppress it, but more ignore it
right.
as just, you know, kind of this weird little thing. But
awesome. That's amazing. Do you have any observations or themes that sort of drive your work that you find yourself, that you keep coming back to?
Our mutual friend Pella Felton describes my poetry as, this is Carrie. She writes a lot of poems about women who are trapped in their house. And I was like, no, wait a minute. And she's not wrong. I have a lot of, just because I spent years as a stay-at-home mom. So I like was literally in my house a lot. So I do have a lot of poems that are looking out windows and describing things out windows in this little sort of world happening beyond the microcosm of my house. And houses are important to me. I'm actually a home inspector.
Okay.
My husband and I have a home inspection business. So I do have an appreciation for and love of houses and the little containers of our lives. So that those kinds of things come up a lot. The opening and closing of doors and windows and being outside looking in or out or inside looking out are a lot of window poems, a lot of things like that. And then water imagery, lakes and rivers and beaches, not ocean so much because the ocean terrifies me. But
there are those places that you feel comfortable and you feel at peace at.
Part of home, part of my sense of home and my sense of place is always seeking the nearest water source and sort of claiming it as part of my landscape.
That's really cool. It's funny how we subconsciously come back to these things over and over again. I'm even thinking of a story of yours I worked with recently where a woman maybe is not trapped in a home, but she's trapped in a home in a box that a bunch of other people have put her in, and she refuses to stay in that box. And that's really funny that you said that. That's sort of in a lot of your work, at least. And I find a lot of stuff from my childhood too comes out whether I want it to or not.
Right. I mean, it shapes us. And again, we don't notice those compulsions and those repetitions in our own work as much as someone else remarking. And like, oh, yeah, you're right. I do.
It's
do
there.
That.
This is Carrie's work, body work. And you're like, oh, okay, I guess it is. That's me.
Right.
So since we've been talking about it, would you want to share any of your poetry on the podcast with us today? We'd love to hear some stuff.
Sure.
Amazing.
So this first poem is from a book called To Have Hoped, which was put out by Finishing Line Press in 2015. Yeah. And this poem is the poem that the title of the book came from. And since we're just recently in a drought and finally got rain yesterday, I wanted to pick this one out. This poem is called Dry Spell.
Oh, beautiful.
It's in four little parts. One. In the first thunderstorm for far too long, the stunted corn stalks cry, beatify, the drops ting-tinging their leaves. See, they quiver. It was not wrong of us to have hoped. Two. That first muddy spring night, wet air wafted distant lightning in my windows. The first poem to blow in on a breeze in many months. I rested my chin on the new wood sill, tried to memorize the drone of unfamiliar crickets, breathed the thunder, thrilled to need to scramble for paper and pen. Three. Glum in the lovely rainstorm, I trust someone, somewhere, will someday be pleased that I keep at my pen my scribbled scraps, the way the corn soldiers itself tall as it can before the scythe and plow. Four. Morning thunder grays away, birdsong. Brown grass blades bathe themselves, gazing heavenward, again greening by the moment. It is as if a lover appeared in the doorway, suitcase in hand. Sigh, home for good.
There's a lot of different different ideas going on in that poem. Can you tell us a little bit about, you know, maybe your inspiration behind it?
I had just moved to Findlay shortly before I wrote that poem, and I hadn't written a lot since I had moved. It's a chaotic time. I wasn't feeling at home down there. So I was going through a dry spell of my own. And then this one night, I had the window open and the rain was coming in, and I just felt inspired to write. And it felt so good. The
sort
sense
of like
relief.
You were getting that reset and you were getting that. That's amazing.
Yeah. The wanting to write in that home helped me feel connected to my home and to the new place by extending that part of my life into that little world.
Oh, amazing. I love it. Let's hear another one. This one looks like it's from a book called Artifacts?
Yep, this is beautiful. From Night Ballet Press in 2017. I had a friend, Mariana Hofer, who was a fellow poet and a photographer in Findlay, and she'd passed away, so this was for her. This is called Dear Abby. What should I take, having permission to dig from my dead friend's garden? If I try the tall ironweed, I will cry if my winds blow it over. I could stick to sweet clover, exotic in my weedless suburb lawn. If milkweed and if monarchs come in that way, she would hover near. The tulip blooms are weeks gone now, so I won't know the colors till spring. In that way, she would surprise, the way her death was a surprise. Perhaps it's best to avoid surprise. If I try a lily, it might disappear into mine. If I transplant strawberries and blue jays eat them in that way, I will have failed her. Tell me which she would choose, were she here to choose, to trowel it out herself, plop it in a plastic grocery sack, hand it to me on my front porch, saying, here, this would look nice over there, to brighten your shade.
I'm sure she would absolutely love that one. That was beautiful.
She was an avid gardener, and her executrix had told several of her friends that they could come take something. Took some lilies. They're orange and they're very pretty.
Get something to something to keep of her for a while. I love that. That's amazing. So let's keep her going. Yeah.
Okay.
What is this one we've got?
This book is Unknowable Things by Roadside Press. This is Holding Someone Else's Baby. I give him what I can, and it's enough because he expects nothing of me. My voice is a new music, as if drifted through a June window. Our faces, a haze of unrelated features to gaze at without milk or lesson. We are each other's candy, briefly intoxicating and flimsy, and nourishing home can be had later, after the afternoon sleep.
There's window and home.
I know. I hear the word window and I'm like, there it is.
You looked at me like, yep, there,
I know.
Right there.
That's
I love
so
it.
Funny.
I love it.
They sneak in there all the time. That was my friend Mike Kaczynski, who was also a poet. I was holding his little baby.
Aww.
And just thinking how lovely it is to, which probably how grandparents maybe feel, that this isn't my kid. It doesn't matter. I'm not going to change his diaper. I'm just going to snuggle him.
I can enjoy this moment with this child.
Right.
And then
hand it off. Right.
Awesome. I would love to hear one more if you've got one.
I've got one more. So this is, the book is To Be Nonchalantly Alive from Kelsey Books. And since I just got home from a trip and picked this one out, this is called To the Fellow Airport Travelers. I scan your faces, determining which are the weary headed home to familiar sheets, which are the exuberant outbounders, hopscotching themselves away from everyday encumbrances. We soar to deliberate towns with books for the interim, tiny bottles of lotion, boarding passes. We pull behind us garments we have chosen for the presentation of our bodies to foreign places. This is who I am, beneath new skies, out from under the roofs of the typical.
I've always loved the title of that book.
Oh,
to be nonchalantly alive, that's great. So I really do appreciate you sharing those with us. Not everybody is comfortable enough to get up, especially in front of a crowd of people, and share poetry. When was the first time you actually did that, when you actually stood up and performed?
College. A lot of us poets gathered at a restaurant downtown called Sam and Andy's Uptown Cafe, which is now Manhattan's, if you're locals and know where Manhattan's is. It was a lovely little cafe, a long-running poetry series that I learned about in college when I was taking poetry classes. So I went to a couple readings before I was brave enough to get up and read something. And I thought, this is the group to do it in if I'm going to do it. I had never done it before. Had no sense, a little sense of whether my poems were very good and would be well received. But so I was very, very, very nervous. And it took years before I stopped being nervous, shaky hands and quavering voice. And at some point I was up reading at an event and I thought, hey, I wasn't nervous that time. I don't know which line I crossed, but eventually I just didn't care anymore. And I don't know if it's confidence in the work, just practice.
Comfortability with the crowd, maybe.
Yeah, I think seeing a lot of readings and seeing that everybody's so different in what they read and different skill levels and different topics, that mine can fit right in there with what everybody else is doing. So there's no reason to feel self-conscious.
Any advice for any writers who feel like their work might be ready to share, but just aren't quite ready to jump in to do that?
You just have to jump in. Yeah. I mean, if you want to do it, do it. Nothing's going to happen to you. You'll be fine. Mm-hmm. Everybody's so supportive. Anytime I'm at a reading and someone says, I haven't ever done this before. I mean, everybody's whooping and hollering and clapping and, cheering them on, and they smile and you can see them relax a little bit. There's nothing at stake, Just do it. If you feel compelled to do it, you just have to do it and fight through the nerves, and eventually they'll go away.
That's very true. I will, to my dying day, say that earlier this year, Johnny McIntyre pressured me to get up and read, but she didn't. She asked me one time if I wanted to. I was like, no, I'm good. And then finally I was like, okay, I'll do it. And it was terrifying. Like you said, I was shaking the whole time. And at the end of it, I was like, that wasn't so bad. But it was, you kind of bearing your soul, and it is a leap.
Mm-hmm.
But if you want to get into it, I say go for it.
And it just gives you this sense of this like baptism into this community, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. that now you're doing what they're doing and you're one mm-hmm. of them. And you know, it's a great feeling.
Yeah. Speaking of the community, can you remind us one more time here before we sign off about sort of the online presence and the places where people can sort of join the poetry journey?
Yes. I mean, the Uncloistered Poetry Series live the second Saturday of every month, and then over Zoom the second Sunday of every month, give or take. Mm-hmm. The calendar on ToledoPoet.com is a great place to find local events. We list everything up there that we find and know about. So certainly listeners out there, if you know of something that's not on that calendar, please shoot us a message and let us know so we can get it out there. I use that calendar to send out a newsletter periodically with just listing here are the upcoming things that are should be on your radar. So if you want to be part of that newsletter and get your email on there, let us know. Get to send a message.
Cool.
And we'll add you.
Is there anywhere anybody can specifically read your work?
If you Google me, you'll find me.
Cool. That's always a weird feeling, isn't
right? It is. I mean,
to be on the Googles.
I have an uncommon name, so there's a. I call him the Meat Man in Kearney, Nebraska. There's a man who runs a slaughterhouse or is a cattle rancher, something like this. He's the only other Carrie Troutman that kind of comes up. So I'm not the Meat Man from Nebraska. I am the poet from Ohio. But there are lots of poems from online journals that are cool. Free to read online, and of course books. But.
Amazing. I hope I hope our listeners go and check that out. And anybody interested in poetry, I hope you go check out the stuff that's going on in Toledo Poet and all that other good stuff. So let's make the community even better than it already is.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for taking some time to talk with me today.
Thank you.
For sharing your work. I know it's easy now and it's you know secondhand, but I know there's a lot of emotion behind it. So we really do appreciate that.
Thank you.
This has been today's episode of Proud to Be of Rust and Glass. Whether reading poetry or as an encouraging face in the crowd, Carrie Troutman is a Toledo area poetry scene icon. Her support is invaluable, her words are transformative, and we're so lucky to have her here locally. Again, I am your host and producer, Curtis Dieter. Our executive producer is Chris Pfeiffer. If you want to join the conversation, check us out at wgte.org/rustandglass. Until next time, thanks for listening. Now, go forth and create.
WGTE. Voices around us.
WGTE is supported in part by the American Rescue Plan Act funds, allocated by the City of Toledo and the Lucas County Commissioners, and administered by the Arts Commission.